So should we waste time and ask your name, or should I wait like for 2 or 3 weeks to see if somebody comes back? It's really not important to know the names if they don't come back, right? Okay. So let's. Aleichem Shalom. Okay. Let's learn. And everything straightforward Chumash. I think I brought one Rashi. It was just. So I'm not going to talk about what I'm going to do. I'm not going to talk about how I do it. A number of years ago, I offered the guys. I said, "Do you want me to teach you a derech, or you just want me to give you candy?" And kids wanted candy. They don't want. They didn't know it's bad for their teeth. They didn't care. They don't want a derech. They just wanted. They just wanted to be entertained. So I'm fine entertaining, and was disappointed in the laziness. But seder, this is what we have. Yes, you want the same thing? You know, I mean, you don't want to work hard. It's the end of the day, end of the week. What do you want? You already smell the cholent. You're already halfway into mein olam haba. I'll give you a derech. We got to pay attention. The question is exaggerating in how much you do that. So we are right now 2/3 of the way through Sefer Devarim. I'm going to make this terrible assumption that you know Devarim. And you know Bereishis, that you should know, right? Shmo, you know all these things. So let's start with some really simple things, which are like obvious and everybody knows them. The only question is if it's right or if it's not right. And you'll give me a second or so and I'll explain that. And I'm going to warn you today that what I'm going to say, I think I've pretty much convinced myself that I'm right. And the danger is that I'm going to convince you that I'm right. And afterwards, you probably won't even be willing to accept that there's another possibility, which is a problem. So I apologize for that right now. If you want, you can fight. It's fine. It just makes it more enjoyable. The difference is when I record, I edit it. I take out like all the silly questions and
what about the jokes?
I take them all out. I'm much funnier in person than I am on YU Torah. I'm not funny, although I've gotten complaints about this that I shouldn't edit as much. Okay, so Sefer Devarim is called by Chazal. It's not called Sefer Devarim. It's called excellent. And the reason it's called Mishneh Torah is machlokas is always a good answer. What? It's review. Good. So what is it a review of? I guess of the other four books, right? That would be good. So let's just start with a really easy question that you probably didn't think of. Is it a repetition of narrative or repetition of law? Good, excellent. Which is funny because the first chapter repeats any law? Second chapter? Third? Okay, and we can try to judge that, how much law is actually repeated, how much isn't repeated. By the way, let's go the other way around. Of the 613 commandments, how many are repeated in Devarim? And for that matter, how many new ones are there? Especially this week's parsha, by the way. Which means if I'm going to claim it's a repetition of the Torah, and again, I'm not going to bother to count. You can go do a statistical analysis, and you'll come very quickly to the realization that that's not necessarily the case. Rather, and here's the beginning of the Yesod that we're going to be going with, and this I decided when we were reading Parshas Devarim this year, I decided that I was going to check and to try to figure out what was being repeated in each particular Parsha. Now, all of you now can argue with me and say, well, why are you divided by the Parshio? The Parshio, it's an artificial break, right? Who cares that that was the Minhag in Bavil, whatever? Okay, but it's still all Minhag. And maybe Chazal were onto something when they made their divisions. So if I were trying to figure out the beginning of Sefer Devarim, and I don't want to go through, I'm not going to go through every single chapter now, but if I wanted to figure out the beginning of Sefer Devarim, what it's repeating or where it's starting from, right? It's really interesting. If Moshe is going to repeat, where does he repeat from? Does he repeat from the day that he was anointed, the day that he stood by the snad, before he was born, the day when he grew up in the palace, Yetzias Mitzrayim? Where does he begin? And by the way, secular scholars drive themselves crazy because they ask silly questions and then they get bad answers because the key to a bad answer is a silly question. But they'll say, hold it, what is repeated, what's not repeated? So for example, the Yakeh does not repeat in Sefer Devarim. So does that mean that the quote-unquote author of Sefer Devarim was unaware of the Yakeh? or of the flood, or of, and I can keep on going, by the way, to other things. But it's not a repetition of everything. But what is it a repetition of, and what is not a repetition of, that's already a much more interesting question. Was all that clear? And yes, I think it's a silly question to try to think about which narratives are included, which aren't included. Yeah.
Why are you assuming it's mostly a repetition of content and not narratives? Can it be both?
Of course, it could be whatever you want. I'm not going to. Whatever makes you happy, that's what it is. I'm just saying that people generally assume it's just the mitzvah, and that's not the case. It's really obvious it's not the case. So where does Seif Devarim begin? Which is, what's the starting point? So I told you, I had this really bad assumption that you know Seif Devarim. So the starting point is, or what Moshe has in front of him, which he's using for the speech as a point of reference. Parshat Devarim is a repetition of Bahaloscha and Shlach. Go, look, work it out, figure it out, and you'll see that that's correct. I mean, it begins with leaving Har Sinai. Why? Presumably, because when they left Har Sinai the first time, it didn't work out well. Now, of course, you can always go straight to the Meraglim, but Moshe doesn't do that. Moshe seems to understand that leaving Sinai is where things go bad. And again, this is really an interesting commentary on Bahaloscha. We can then go further, I'm going to say it again, chapter by chapter, parsha by parsha, and try to figure out what's being repeated. At some point we get to Veschanan, it goes back a little bit further. It's not leaving Sinai, Sinai itself is being referenced there, right? Is that clear? Look, if you really want to be honest, if you would find Hillel or Shammai, you can decide which one. If they're Ger, who wanted to be a Makabel Sefer Dvarim, or the Omen on Regal Achas, and you want to take it into one, so what's Sefer Dvarim about? Don't do a Avodah Zarah. That's what the whole book is about. Right? Everything else is kind of taking you on side points and tangents. That's what the book is about. But, and that gets repeated more than anything else, but nonetheless, there's something else going on. And I want to now move over to this week's Parsha. As I said, we could analyze Parsha by Parsha, but this happens to be Ki Teitzeh. So Ki Teitzeh should be easy because there's lots and lots of mitzvot. And as I said, I'm repeating myself now. Maybe all that I should be doing is take a look at the 57 mitzvot, see how many of them are for the first time, how many are being repeated, and that itself becomes interesting in terms of this idea of Mishneh Torah, of the repetition of law, if things are not, if substantial amounts of are not being repeated. So now, and here's something we need to do. You need to separate between evidence and conclusions, because evidence does not necessarily prove the conclusions that you wanted to do. So the evidence which is here, I've noticed, and I'm sure other people have noticed, and probably in little pieces of it, but the conclusion that we're going to get to will be overwhelmingly clear as we continue. So let's just start from the very beginning. Ki teitze limilcham aleivecha, unesno Hashem elokecha biyadecha vishavisa shivyo, reisa vishavyo eishes yivaz toar v'chashachta b'vlakachta l'chol isha. So, what is it that I'm going to do? Because he wanted some methodology. What are we going to try to do? So, again, as a starting point, there's something called pshat. What's the definition of pshat? Generally, it depends on who you're talking to. Because Rashi, and the Rashbam, and the Ramban, and the Ibn Ezra, and the Chizkuni, and we can keep on going, all of them have different understandings of what exactly Pshat is. I'll give you a definition of Pshat. Pshat is a contextual understanding of the Torah. What's the problem, or what's the question? How broad of a context are you going to use? Are you going to look at a really narrow context, or are you going to look at a broader context? A lot of what I'm going to do today is going to be based upon language. Some of it is going to be based upon theme. By the way, language is better than theme because it's strong, it's much stronger. You can make a gzeir shava out of the language. Thematic connections are good, but not as good as language. But that's what we're going to see. So when I read this pasuk, does it remind us of anything? Which means, is there any other context that could serve as a basis for this kind of thing? You see an eshiva Torah, and you want her, and you take her. And then the Torah gives you a prescription for how you go about taking her. Now, by the way, first of all, I do have to state, and I hope I don't have to state, that there is or should be something really morally objectionable to the Parsha of Eishes Yivas Torah. Do we all understand that? Or are you saying, no, this is like a really cool halacha? Like if we told secular Israelis about this, we'd be declaring war in Sweden tomorrow, right? Or we do realize that there's something which is really disturbing about this. Which means, essentially, isn't Torah supposed to be something which tells us how to control our Yetzirah? And over here, the Torah can say, whoa, you have Yetzirah, cool, let's go and act upon it, and this is what you need to do. And especially if you follow Chazal, that this is going to lead to two wives, one is beloved and one isn't beloved, and that's going to lead to Ben Sarah Mora, which means essentially Torah is giving you over here a prescription for blowing up your family. So why in the world should a Torah possibly allow this? So that's a little strange. I'm not talking about that today. I've spoken about that before. You can go look and you can find where I spoke about it. But does this remind, is there anybody who ever did this? Or something like this. That's why I have to be careful. This or something like this. So the answer is yes. And now I'll already give you the hint of what we're going to do today. We're going to be claiming that, and I'll explain to you why, that Kitetze is actually a really interesting commentary on Sefer Bereishis. Okay? Now, the reason for this, why it's so easy and so simple, even though I did not find anyone to say it, the reason why it's really simple and obvious is because this whole parsha is about dysfunctional behavior. I think marriage is mentioned 5 times in the parsha, not one, the romantic one. Like, all kinds of difficulties and problems that you end up together for whatever reason. So that's interesting. But I said, this is all about dysfunctionality. Do we have any book which deals with a great deal of dysfunctionality? And what's the answer? Yeah. Bereishis. It's full of dysfunctionality. That's what the whole book is about. And if you want to really concentrate on the dysfunctionality, where do you get to? You get to Yaakov and Esav, and then you get to Yosef and the brothers. It's all dysfunctionality. So now, if I'm going to stake a claim, as I said I am, that Kitetze is a really interesting commentary. Now, I have to be careful with the word commentary. It's a really interesting commentary, and if I have to put it a little differently, which in my mind has clearly been impacted by, this is the part which is more interesting, by the narrative in Bereishis essentially gives birth to the laws in Kitetze. Was that easy? Should I say that again in English? The stories, narrative is okay? I'm allowed to... I'll try not to make fun of you, but what? I know if I was teaching in Gush that I can say narrative, but oh. So I have to be careful.
You wouldn't be able to make these shoes jokes.
Why not?
They don't have
these shoes. They don't? I hear. Should I say that again? It seems to me that if you're keeping in mind, as you read through Kitetze, essentially ask yourself a simple question. Everything you get to, hold it, where did I see this in Bereishis? What does that symbol do? Although the difference is, this is law and that's narrative. So what I said is that somehow the narrative of Bereishis gives birth to the laws of Kitetze. But does what I just now said, is it obvious to anyone? Any examples come forth or it's completely, yes, an example comes forth? Two wives, that's easy. Wasn't that easy? Which means you could have said, okay, that was just one random thing. Yeah? Say it again. Ba'asher Husham and compared to? I know, Ba'asher Husham is Ba'yishmael. Ah, good. That was also easy because then you had Rashi and you had the Maharal. So stop it. That's cheating already. And you have to compare the Maharal in both places. It's not exactly the same in the two places. Yeah? Good, good. Finally, we got someplace. Excellent. So we have, okay. If Sarah is going to be taken, which then you have to kind of claim that Sarah is a Yifat Tohar, is anybody in Bereishis described as a Yifat Tohar? Rachel's the only one in Chumash, other than maybe Yosef.
Rachel's called
Yifat Tohar? Yeah. Is that interesting? Who's the only other Yifat Tohar in Tanakh?
Esther.
Good. See how easy that was? And Yosef. Which really, there's a comparison between Yosef and Esther. That's, which means, no, you don't get that? I said, just because I said it last doesn't mean I still think it's true. I actually just now wrote a book on Esther. I wrote a book on Purim just now. I gave it as a wedding present to somebody. The title of the book was The Names of the Chassan and the Kala, whatever. Yeah. So, If anybody really wants, I have a couple copies. Anyway, Yosef, Tzofnas Paneach, Yosef is all about being hidden. Esther is hidden, but the book of Esther is clearly modeled, also in terms of the trop, in terms of the language, right? Kasher avadati avadati, and what does that echo in the Megillah? You Lane, or you just guessed before? Okay. Okay. Okay, good. We'll stop with that. The beautiful Jew who's hidden, whose identity isn't known, is in the palace, who's going to be serving as the salvation for everybody else. The Esther story had open in front of them, the Yosef story. And as I said, that's all very, very clear. So good. So Sarah is taken twice. Rivka, almost. Right, Avimelech there as well. Is there anything else which is close to Ishi's Vastor story? Dina. Right? And you'll recognize that Dina was the hardest one to figure out, correct? So essentially we right now have... And is there a common denominator here? Of course there's a common denominator. What is it? All the men behaving badly all come from Cham. Okay? Right? So I'm saying that's the common denominator. Now that should bother us. Why should that bother us? Because we're from Shem. We're Semites. So therefore, we don't behave this way. So we don't behave like Power. We don't behave like Avimelech. We don't behave like Shem. We should be behaving on a more elevated level, which then, I'm asking the same question I asked before, but I'm just asking it a little bit different. Why would the Torah give license to us to behave in a way that is so morally reprehensible? Yes? And again, if you're going to go back to this point of dysfunctionality, why would you think that the child that is raised based upon you taking advantage of this woman, why would you think that this child suddenly going to have a great deal of love to the father? So let's leave that and point out a couple things. Let's try again. That second half of the pasuk, any of those words, yikach is easy, that was easy. You're not learning Kedushin, are you? Okay, that was easy. V'chashaktaba. Okay, that goes back to Dina. That goes back to the Dina story. A little bit afterwards, it says, V'yoyim lo chafatztaba v'shilachta l'nafsho machar lo t'grein b'kesav lo t'merabo tachat asher inisa. So, inui, where is that found as well? See, now I can start making fun of you, because this isn't Devarim, this is Bereishis. Yeah? No? Dina, it's still Dina. This is all Dina. V'ra'isa, over here, v'yar osa Shechem, right? V'ra'isa, and afterwards it says, v'yikach osa, here, v'yikach, v'yishkav osa, v'yaneha, that's the Inoy, over here. And later on, when it comes to make this claim of... So the word all of meaning, and I know what you're thinking. Maybe these words are found in lots and lots of places. They're not. Which means over here you actually have a cluster of words which are being used in the creation of the laws over here, which actually have an earlier place. One more question. Do we have any examples where an Eishitivas Torah, but not by that name, is taken in Bereishis? Do we find any of the good guys taking women? So Yud and Tamar, we'll get back to them. What? No, you're working too hard. The end of the Dina story. Why do I say that? What does it say at the end? It's the part that we don't remember. First of all, you have a conversion process. Do you see what I just now did? Well, you missed what I just now did. I'm making it sound like it's really important, and you're saying, hold it, what was so important? Can you tell them why it was important? Exactly. You have a conversion process taking place, which is in Bereishis, it's Shimon and Levi using this in order to go wipe out a city. But over here, there's a conversion process which takes place. So I'm saying, that's really, I'm going to say it again. Notice how the narratives in Bereishis, either by being the same or the exact contrast of it, giving birth to the laws which are going to present themselves over here in Dvarim. I just wanted to get to the very end of the section. It says, Bnei Yaakov bo alachalim v'yavozu ha'ir. That's war, right? They wipe them out and they go, and they're taking what's biza? They're taking the spoils of war. Et sonam v'et bikaram v'et chamorehim v'et asher bi'ir v'et asher b'sadeh lachu. Ve'et kol chelam ve'et kol tapam ve'et nishayhem shavu v'yavozu. So can you all admit you never noticed that before? That they took all the women? Which means when I say, hold it, do we have any issues about Torah taking place? Yeah. They took them. Now, you could say they didn't take them as wives. They took them as slaves. Who knows who in the world the Bnei Yaakov married. But I'm just saying, it's really interesting. And I'm saying it again. I don't care if it's exact. I'm not looking for exactitude. There were enough words over here in this section which led me to say, wow, that's really an interesting comparison or contrast in terms of, again, multiple words and thematically the connection which is taking place over here. And by the way, Yaakov, let's not kid ourselves. Yaakov does not like all of this, but it is interesting nonetheless how if Yaakov were around to read Sefer Torah. Now, I know that some of you are going to tell me that Yaakov kept Kol HaTorah Kula. I'm fine with that. I'm okay. But still, Yaakov, I think, would appreciate the way that it was written in Dvarim, because that really is an interesting comment on what had taken place over there, which is, yeah, the Torah gives you a process, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. But again, if we're already picking on Yaakov, so the next part should be obvious. Kitiena le'ishte nashim. Does that remind you of anyone? Achad ahuva v'achad snua. So again, does this remind you of anything? This is not hard. This is easy. So. Was there a test to get in here? What? No. So Gemara, I can start asking? Okay. Suddenly backs down. Okay. Yeah. Who has two wives, and one of them is Ahuvad, one of them is Snu'ah? Again, you want, we could be a lot more careful on that. Yitzchak didn't have two wives. Okay, I know you guys are doing this on purpose, just to see if I can get if you get me upset. But in Bereishis, it says, "V'Rochel hayta yifat toar v'yifat mar'eh." What else was described as yifat mar'eh? So one was Yosef. What else? The cows during the good years. The cows also. So that was the other trick question there. V'yahav Yaakov et Rachel. Right? Yaakov loves Rachel. At the end of this section, it says, V'yavo gam el Rachel, v'yahav et gam et Rachel mi Leah. He loves Rachel more than Leah. Now, it doesn't say that Leah was hated yet, until we get to the next pasuk. It doesn't say that Leah was hated. All that it says is that she came in second in terms of favorite wives. Now, you could appreciate a possibility of a woman who comes in second when in terms of how, you know, who your favorite wife is, that she will feel something other than love. And it says next, Vayar Hashem kisnua Leah. And God sees that Leah is hated. But is that a question of, is she objectively hated or just compared to, or is that how she feels? All that doesn't concern me right now, but what it does concern me is that we read in Devarim when it says that somebody has, now, by the way, this part should have been obvious to everybody, including what continues in Devarim. If somebody happens to have two wives, now, does that remind us of anyone? Yes, Reuven, because Reuven is the firstborn from Leah, who's the one who's not loved as much as the other. You can't then go and give the double portion to the younger son of the wife who's loved, like someone did. Who's that? like Yaakov did in terms of giving Yosef. So that's really interesting. And by the way, just in case you don't get it, in the next pasuk it says, Ki et habachor ben asno yakir latet lo pishnaim b'chol l'shem tzilo ki hu reshit ono lo mishpat b'chora. Does that phrase reshit ono remind you of anything? The bracha for Reuven. Reuven, who is the son, who has been displaced, where it says that you can't displace the son of the wife who you don't love for the one that you do love, over here, nonetheless, that's the exact language. I'm saying that's what's really interesting. Who's lost me already? What?
How are we not here lost?
Habor reik ain. Okay. No, stay with me. Over here in Sefer Devarim, it tells us that if a man has two wives, and he likes one more than the other, but the one that he likes more, the son is not the Bechor, you can't displace the Bechor, even though you didn't like the mother, and then give over double portion to the one that you love. Which is exactly what, by the way, we're already there. It's exactly what Yaakov does. Now don't bother me. Really, don't bother me. Go and ask one of you, Rebbeim, how could Yaakov do something which ends the Torah? Yaakov Avinu kept Kol Torah Kula. He even kept Erev, whatever. You could, right? Go ask somebody.
He has experience with being a little bit not so straightforward with the
Torah. So, good. So you say Yaakov's wrong. Or, I'm so glad I didn't say that. I hope they use Yain Mavushal in the yeshiva. Anyway. Okay. Okay. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe. Spain is manim. So, I know I could say what I already said before, that the narrative in Bereishis is what creates the laws in Devarim. So don't bother me with the question of why the characters in Bereishis don't behave according to the standards in Devarim, when over here the Torah is, again, clear, this is the point that I lost you, is clearly using the language regarding Reuven, in terms of the Bechor, Reshit Ono, right? Ruvain Bukhari Ata, Kochi Bereshit Oni, Yeter Seit Vieter Oz, Pachas Kamaim Al Totar Kielita Mishkave Avicha. We're not going to the Dudayim today, right? They're not ready for that yet. Okay. They may not even be ready by the end of the year. What do we do then? Okay. So, my point is, again, when you read through this parasha, the language, the words, remind us of something which was there before. Come, I'll give you another example. This one is weaker, okay? So you don't have to tell me, I'm telling you. This one's weaker, but I just wanted to put it anyway. Ben Sora Mora, what does it say about? Kiela Ish Ben Sora Mora, Enu Shemei Bekol Aviv Bekol Imo. So there's a, first of all, the Gemara says something really interesting. And I'm more going after the Gemara than after the Chumash. So, I know it. You don't have to tell me. And anybody needs a Dvar Torah, you can just do this by itself. Okay. One of the things the Gemara says is that in order to be Ben Sora Mora, both the father and mother need to speak the same way. The exaggerated form of that is they even need to have the same type of voice. That's an exaggeration. What the Gemara really means is, again, go back to that word, dysfunctionality. If the mother and father don't get along, and the father's always saying this, and the mother's always saying this, and there's fighting in the house because they don't agree about anything, so what do you expect the kid to come out like? The kid is going to act out. But this is simple, what I'm saying right now. This unfortunately, is part of human psychology. So it's saying is if the kid comes from a dysfunctional family, it ends up being dysfunctional, so you can't do the Ben Sora Mora on him. But if the mother and father speak the same language, if there's unity between the mother and father, so then the kid could have a din of Ben Sora Mora. Good? Yes? That's the Gemara. So over here, where does it, they get it from? They say, by the Ben Sora Mora, it says, Enu shomea bikol avu v'kol imo. He doesn't listen to both of their voices, so apparently they're speaking the same way, and they're saying the same thing. So now if you go into, so who's the Ben Sora Mora? Who's my choice of Ben Sora Mora? Is Esav. Why? He doesn't listen to the kol avu v'kol imo. Although the part of the reason I'm doing this is the word kol is used there, especially hakol kol Yaakov vidaim de Esav, but it's more than that. And again, I'm going to leave a lot of this. Maybe if you decide to continue, we'll see when we get to Bereishis that Esav and Rivka actually have no relationship whatsoever. There's no relationship to speak of. There's never any communication, but it's this. Esav seems to be this person, and I know that I'm being guilty now of going more to the Midrashic understanding of Esav, that he comes from the field, and he killed, and he murdered, and he eats, and so on and so forth, that Esav is the person who has very poor impulse control. Now, when I already said that he has poor impulse control, that you already seen the text itself. I mean, that's part of the personality that you see itself. I'm just saying that Ben Sohmer reminds me of Esav. And we'll leave it at that. The main reason we're going to leave it at that is because we have 10 minutes left and I'm only up to page 3 and I have 7 pages of notes. So, yeah, in Devarim, Perek Kufbet, we've moved on to the next Perek. This emphasis of when you see your brother and your brother's having difficulty, okay, anyway, Kitiret Shor, Achicha, right? Do you notice the emphasis on achicha? Just note for a second. If you were to compare this with Parshat Kedoshim, there sometimes it says b'nei amecha, b'nei amisecha. Sometimes it uses, again, different types of terms. Over here, achicha, 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 which means brothers have to get along. So when I hear this emphasis that brothers have to get along, I'm going to do the same thing again. Do we ever see any examples of brothers not necessarily getting along? My favorite part is the end, where it's at, or even before, lo tochalat aleim, you cannot ignore, you cannot make believe you don't notice. Now, were there any brothers who ignored their brother's pain? Because I keep saying it's the narrative there that it's the dysfunctionality there which creates the halacha for us here and therefore creates the functionality. Meaning, in a certain sense, if you want to say this more Kabbalistically, you can say that Sefer Devarim is a tikkun for Sefer Bereishis. This is telling how we should be behaving based upon those narratives there. So I'll say it again. Do you have any examples where brothers ignore their brother, and what's the answer? What? And by Yosef, where the brothers themselves say, why did all of this happen to us? Because we ignored his pain. Now, once you get to Yosef, go a little bit further. I'm going to take a little bit of a detour, because I'm going in order in Devarim. You have the part of sending the mother bird away. Why? It says, Lo tikach ha'im al banim. Is that phrase, aim al banim, used any place in Bereishit? Yeah? It's when Yaakov comes back and he's afraid of Esav, he says that he will kill Eim Albanim. And it's the exact phrase that he uses. Hatzileni yamiyad achi miyad Esav, ki yarei anochi oto pen yavova keni Eim Albanim. Which, by the way, we just now actually did something else which is interesting for those, again, who I may run the risk of losing. It's really the dysfunctionality of the Yaakov-Esav relationship then gives birth to the dysfunctionality of the Yosef and his brother's relationship. And the phrases that we're going to constantly find over here through Kitetze will be from one or the other of those. Dvarim Perakufbed Pasakufbed Kim Tsaishokhev im Isha Bulat Baal Umetugam Shneim. Right? Inappropriate to sleep with a married woman. You wanted one that actually has the same. That's Yosef and Esha Potifar. Also thematically is the same, yeah.
They didn't have any.
Why would you say that?
Because in the first beginning of life, when Yaakov was just not Esav, and when Yaakov and Esav met up finally for the first time, all the children were born, and then had that son, at least grown up partially. And then afterwards, there's no occurrence that we know of
Right, right, but they do meet him during that. That's why I was surprised. They do meet him when Yaakov comes.
Meet him, but especially if you just look at the Pesach Shabbos, like, there's no massive.
There's more interaction.
There's no, at least, very negative interaction between the two.
Okay.
Now, that might breed the brothers ignoring one another, because that's all they see, their father ignoring his brother. They don't see.
No. I'm not talking about that they learned, it's learned behavior. I'm saying is that it's something which echoes and comes back again. Perikov bed, Pasukov Aleph, the imbisodium tsar ish et na'ara, na'ara is written chaser without the hay at the end. Umeta isha sheshachav ima, ulanara lota sadavar, in lanarchet mavet. All of those same words are going to be in, also, it says. Yeah, all of those same words are going to be used again in describing Dina. In terms of a rape scene over by Dina, they're all used over here as well. Perikov al kovchet, yes, continuing. Again, all of these words are the same coming back in the Dina section. Lo yikach ishet eshet aviv. Lo yikach ishet eshet aviv. Do you have what? Reuven. Vayelech Reuven yishkav et bila. By the way, it's interesting. There it's called Pilegesh aviv, even though later on she's described as a wife. I'm skipping Ammoni and Moavi and Bilam. All of this we could put together. Lo tia kedesha. Is a kedesha mentioned any place in Bereishit? Tamar. Correct. We're not going to work so hard. Okay, here's a good one. Ki tidor nedur l'Hashem alokecha, lo tacher l'shalmo. Is there anybody in Bereishit who makes a nedur and then doesn't keep it? And God has to tell him to keep it. It's not a neder. Yeah. What? Yeah. And how do you know he doesn't keep it? First of all, it says, Vayidur Yaakov neder. That's in Perek Kof Chet. Then Perek Lamed Hei, Vayomer Lokimo Yaakov, Kumalei Beit El, Vishav Shem, Vasei Shem Izbeach, Kel Nerelecha, Berechem Ifnei, Esav Achicha. He has to tell him to go and do it. By the way, here's the Rashi I told you I was going to point out. Here Rashi actually says, oh, what happened to Dina is because he didn't pay back your neder on time. So don't get upset with me. Rashi says that over here. Perikov Dalet Pasuk Zayin. Kim Tzaiish Gonev Nefesh Machivu Mochro. Kidnapping and selling somebody. Yes, do you recognize that in any place that we've been talking about? By the way, we're getting easier now. Yes? Right. One second. Are you now noticing a theme that we're onto something here? The question is, how many of them do you need before you say, oh, couple more and we'll stop. Zachorit Asher Sar Shem LeMiriam. Miriam in terms of Lashon Hara. Is anybody who spoke Lashon Hara which causes any problems here? Yosef is the Diba. Correct. Don't not pay your worker Biyomo Titein Scharo. Pay him right away. Is there any worker who you know of that didn't get paid? Right. Right, Yaakov complains afterwards, he kept changing my thing, and he takes a very long time to pay him. A lot of the language over here takes us back a little bit further to, where's Riv used, that word used? No, the Riv is not used there, where? By Lot, by the shepherds of Lot and the shepherds of Am, and immediately afterwards, well, Lot goes to stone, which is really important because it's tikkot tzaddik v'yisho to Russia. Then Avram's going to complain. Are you going to treat the tzaddik like the Russia? And the words in this pasuk as well go right back into the Lot and then to the Sodom story. Both of them were there, and finally, two more minutes. Kiyeshu yachtov. And this goes to the whole story of Yibum. Do you have any Yibum story taking place? Yehuda and Tamar, which again is here. And finally, the potentially last example. The Parsha ends, and this is the one thing that I've said before. The Parsha ends with Amalek. Amalek, of course, goes back to the Yaakov Esav of dysfunctionality with finally Amalek wanted to come after Am Yisrael. Immediately before the Amalek section, there's another section, and at least one of the Rishonim says you should go back and look, because that's what caused all the problems. The Evan Shlema. And where do you have the Evan Shlema taking place in terms of a business deal? It's where Yaakov goes, and when Yaakov goes, when Esav comes to Yaakov and says that I'm hungry, and then he uses what I think some of us would call bad business practices. And who says this? Could be the Chizkuni who says it. I have to go back and look. But one of the Rishonim from France said this, that leads to how to the attitude that Amalek has towards Am Yisrael. So I'm going to say again what it is that I did. Anybody want the sources? I'll send you the sources so you can just see how I lined them all up. I'm happy to send them to you. But what is it that I did? I could say, before we walked in here, what's going on? Oh, first of all, you would have called this Mishnah Torah, it's a repetition of Torah. I think you'd be hard-pressed to show me what percentage of these were actually taught before. It's a very small percentage. On the other hand, saying, so these did not come out of a vacuum. What I've tried to show is that there is a really consistent theme which goes beyond all of this, and that is the dysfunctionality in Bereishis. Why would that be connected? Because Kitetze is full of dysfunctionality. So I could have, and this was like always in my head, I never had connected it. Yeah, Bereishis is dysfunctionality, and Kitetze has dysfunctionality. And all that I said, hold it a second. Let me start, because as I told you, what I was looking for this year on every single thing in Devarim, is it being repeated? Is there some kind of a source for it? Was it mentioned before? And as I said, the cluster of those things, the use of language, the thematic connections is what took me back to Sefer Bereishis. Most of it has to do with Yaakov and his children, most of this over here. Again, I stretched it a little bit further than this. And as I said, I didn't see anybody do this analysis that we just now did. Am I right? I'm convincing myself that I'm right. We can have a vote afterward. You could decide if you think that there's something here which is worth working on. But again, it's trying to see pshat based upon the larger context. That's, I told you, what pshat is. How broad do you put the context? So what did I try to do today? I try to claim that the pshat in Dvarim is connected to something which is beneath the surface, which is actually the dysfunctionality which takes place in Bereishit. And I'll say it again. And then it comes out that the laws that we have over here in Dvarim turn out to be a tikkun for all of that dysfunctional behavior that took place in Bereishit. We good? If anybody wants a copy of this? I didn't explain it. I think that once you realize where all of this leads to, let me put it like this. It's very difficult to fight your Yetzirah at that moment. The way to fight a Yetzirah is to realize consequences. This will lead to this, this will lead to this, will lead to this. First consequence is she's your wife, she gets the credit card. I mean, that should be enough, right? Secondly, where it continues is that not only is she your wife, she gets the credit card, what kind of kids do you think are going to come out of a dysfunctional relationship? I mean, and that's exactly what Chazal say. Which, sure, you could do what you want, that's fine. But deal with consequences.
It's interesting that the tikkun is almost like a math here of like, see what happens, this is how you...
You really want Bereishis happening again? That didn't work out all that well. I always thought that when Chazal say it's keneged Yetzirah, it didn't mean a concession, but a way of fighting the Yetzirah. Yeah, you could do this, but this is not going to work out well. But now it's even stronger. It's not going to work out well. I mean, look how well things worked out in Bereishis, even with the Shiftei Ka, even with people at Tzaddikim.
And does this connect back to Yosef and his Yetzirah?
Excuse me?
Does this connect back to Yosef and his Yetzirah?
Yes. Everybody have a